radio portion of that, the electromagnetic portion of it, takes 8 minutes to get from the sun to the earth. If the CME was a burst of energy that lasted for 1 minute, and it takes 8 minutes for that burst of energy to get here, then yes, in space there is a bundle of energy that for a period of time is no longer connected to the sun. It hasn't yet become connected to the earth. That bundle of TEM energy is traveling through space. So making a pulse brief enough that in the medium you're transmitting it through, it's now moving independently through the middle of the medium, and it no longer is connected to the source, or no longer, and not yet connected to the load. There's no magic in that so far. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
Beautiful. So we have a longitudinal element in the transversal wave that is traveling through the space. And that's a kind of constant. We say that the speed of light is the highest speed that it could go, and electromagnetic wave travels at that speed. At that point, we might say that if we concentrate on that linear motion, that is one of the factors of slinky. Then if you say, and if you read carefully the material that I have sent you, the sun is not only sending the electromagnetic waves or whatever the energy, but it's sending a burst of the particles. If then you concentrate on the whole pattern of the particles sent to the earth, with the electromagnetic field on it, now you have a comparison to the slinky and the movement of the slinky. Yes or no? And to agree.
I think I agree so far. Go ahead.
The longitudinal wave in mechanics is no secret. The only thing is that official science is protesting of the existence of longitudinal wave in electromagnetic science. So if we see the similarities, then we say, okay, we're dealing with sort of mechanical phenomena in within the burst of plasma that also contains electromagnetic field in it. Now we have a long linkage between the sun and the earth, and you tend to agree with it. As we have that, as we know that if I touch this slinky, let me stop.
Yeah, let me stop you right there. There's a problem here. If I had a slinky that's strung, an ideal slinky that's strung between me and John's house, it's a mechanical, real slinky. And I grab my end of the slinky, and for a short period of time, I push my end toward John. And then a second later, I pull my end back toward me. I have now launched a mechanical longitudinal wave on the slinky. That's true. And if you look at that pulse of energy going down the slinky, there are portions of the slinky where the distance between the turns is less. There's a compression wave moving down the slinky. That is a mechanical longitudinal wave. When I send pulses of circular polarized radio wave, yes, it's like a slinky, but the individual turns of the slinky of wave in radio do not get compressed. I didn't change the wavelength. There's a bundle of energy in a slinky-like manner. The whole damn slinky, by the way, in the case of radio wave, is moving toward John. But the individual spaces between the individual turns, which is the wavelength, which is proportional to the frequency, does not change. Because the wavelength between the turns didn't change, there is no longitudinal wave in that radio wave of pulses that I'm sending toward John. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
I agree with that. The only thing is that when you have a burst of particles sent from the sun to the earth, the reality travels. And this thing has the electromagnetic field attached to it as a feature. Any material could be used as an antenna, and any material could be used as the conductor, as long as it does have a certain fundamental features to do it. Let me just. As long as we have a meter, and meter behaves similar to slinky, John, from your house, when you push the slinky, is able to feel that impact. You are actually sending on your own the energy that you're paying for to John, and John is able to absorb that energy and able to use that energy if he wants to, and to exist.
Yes, but we've got to carefully subtract, differentiate between mechanical motion of a slinky, that is a longitudinal wave, versus electronic signal in a slinky-like manner for a circular polarized wave. They are very different. Naively, they look a little bit similar, but a compression wave, when I move my hand on a mechanical slinky, that is a longitudinal wave. And the sound wave that goes between my mouth and this microphone now, that is a longitudinal wave. It's a compressive wave. If I look at one particular cycle of what's coming off my mouth, so to speak, or my vocal cords, in some particular section, the air molecules are compressed together, and that compressed area is moving forward at the speed of sound. That is a longitudinal wave, but it's mechanical. Electronics doesn't do that. So to make an electronic longitudinal wave, lots of people have thought they have seen them. Lots of people have thought they've generated them. Everything I know about the Poynting vector and Maxwell's equations and Lenz's law and whatever, you put them all together, the only kind of radio wave that will propagate through space is transverse. The E field must be at right angles to the direction of propagation. The H field must be at right angles to the propagation. In a simple non-bounced wave, there is never any E field in the Z axis. There's never any H field in the Z axis. You can think you're generating that. And locally, within an antenna structure, you can do it. But it will not propagate in free space. It's an evanescent wave. It dies out in inches. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't obey the Poynting vector. It doesn't obey Maxwell's equations. It doesn't propagate.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Yeah, I wonder at what then Mr. Marconi was doing, spending $1 million on today's money in California when he was trying to build, in 1919, his power station that was using ground based on longitudinal wave technology, and it was stopped by the government of the United States in 1921. And to extend.
I don't know the incident you're discussing, but it has all of the flavor of a so-called conspiracy theory. If he had something of value, and if it really would work, and it became public knowledge, you're telling me no one else would try it just because somebody stopped it at that time? You can't keep that much light under a bushel basket. Over to you, Wes.
I'm in, Dick.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, even if you want to look at the TEM wave during Doppler effect, whether it's stretching or compression, it's still a TEM wave. So I know you didn't cover that, but that's how I look at that also.
I understand that. I was trying to get to the point, and I'm trying to get to the point for so many times, which is good. Because after each one of the attempts, I'm getting smarter. Thank you to John, Glenn, Dick, Eric, and a few others. That's what I'm doing. Let me drop. So that would be a point in which all of the points that you mentioned have been thought carefully by me, and eventually find something, thanks to you guys, that will be kind of really hard to answer. Now, my question to you, because we're standing on it, The total amount of energy radiated from the antenna remains constant for any given transmitter output power when this energy is focused to the energy radiated in one or more directions. And then it will be increased, and the energy radiated will be more in that direction than the others. Let me jump. My question to you is, let's say we're dealing with the current distribution in the antenna. An antenna is not one quarter of length, is not one half of the wavelength, but number of wavelength. So let's say we're dealing with the antenna. Based on the article that I have sent you, and I made also the drawing, L equals 1.5 of lambda. Now, we see that in the middle where we have a feeding line, we have a concentration of the current as well as in the middle of each one of the sides, left and right side of the dipole. True or false, and to extreme.
Yeah, one of the articles you mailed me has got some very nice pictures of antennas. I'm trying to bring that one up right now. And there's nothing magic about making a dipole eighth wave, quarter wave, half wave, one wave, two waves, three waves long. And the pattern you get out of that is well documented in the ARRL antenna book. So once you choose the length of the wire of the antenna and you properly feed it, the three-dimensional pattern of the antenna pattern you get in space is well known. What do you want to do with that, Wes? Go ahead.
Yeah, the memo.cgu.edu.tw, that's the link that I have sent you, and it's the page antenna 48, says resonance, antennas, wires, and patches. What I'm trying to do is trying to investigate the current distribution in the antennas. Let's say we have a three times a light wavelength or whatsoever. Now, this antenna is no longer, and I made a drawing also. You see the two coils, left and right. And you see the ground level. So the antenna is almost lying on the ground. What I'm trying to do is creating the interference point, which means that the only reason to build sophisticated antenna is to control radiation pattern, but the radiation pattern is controlled by focusing the radiated energy, and the geometry of the antenna and the proximity of nearby objects are the main controlling factors. So I'm trying to create a antenna that is two coils. Antenna could be a few inches long. The Q of antenna would be absolutely disaster, but I don't care about it. I'm trying to create a moment in which I will to have interference with the ground and eventually try to tune to the resonance frequency of that interference pattern.
Was there a question in there?
I want to know how the antenna behaves. You have a 10,000 feet of wire from left-hand side, 10,000 feet of wire from the right-hand side, and it's two coils, and connected with the feeder. Let's say 50 ohms, 75 ohms, whatever. Now, the frequency of operation would be, let's say, that the length of the antenna would be, say, 10 lambda or 20 lambda. Now, antenna is almost lying on the ground. What I'm trying to determine is what is the impact of the ground versus such antenna, because we never discuss longer wire than the wavelength, and eventually how the resonant frequency would be affected by that.
A very long wire above ground is a beverage antenna, and it has a very predictable gain and pattern. Two wires that are in a V-shaped pattern, very long wires over the ground, when they usually now close the V-shape into a diamond, that's called a rhombic antenna. So many wavelengths on the side of a piece of wire in certain shapes of either beverage or rhombic produce a very well-known pattern. Is that what you're asking about, Wes? Go ahead, K2RIW.
That is correct. Marconi made this kind of antenna. So basically what he did, he used a very long wire on left-hand side of the dipole and right-hand side of the dipole with a feeding line. And that antenna was very low above the ground, and the other part of the antenna was the metal grid on approximately 10,000 square miles. One square mile per direction, because he was trying to have a direction on Asia, on Australia, and on Europe. Yeah, 1 square mile, and there was a copper grid that was buried about 75 centimeters below the ground level. What I'm trying to find out, and when you look at Eric Dollard's video, you're going to see how that antenna was designed. What I'm trying to find out is how that structure was working, because then if two coils fitted by the coaxial cable had its own resonant frequency, because it was low on the ground, then in comparison to that sort of ground made out of grid under the surface of the ground, the resonant frequency of that structure was changed. What he was trying to do is sending pulses, 60 pulses per second, and to X-ray.
Is there a question in there?
Yeah, the question is how the antenna is being impacted by the closeness to the Earth. You have made some points about the antenna that was lying on the ground, and one of the ham radios operators was using that. Enter again.
He's talking about the snake.
Yeah, the Herbie snake antenna was a compromised antenna made out of RG8 coaxial cable, stripped back in certain ways and fed certain ways, but it laid flat on the guy's lawn. And he transmitted on 20 meters, and we listened to him on 20 meters, and we compared it to a real dipole in the air. He was 20 decibels weaker than the real dipole in the air, but he did transmit. And the antenna laying flat on the ground wouldn't excite his landlord. It wouldn't get the landlord unhappy that he's got antennas in the air and he's making the property ugly. I guess as long as the lawn wasn't mowed too close to the ground, the cable could be laying below the grass level and almost not even see it. So when you put any kind of an antenna close to the Earth, at most of the HF frequencies, the Earth is a pretty good mirror, pretty good reflecting surface. So whatever you think your antenna is, you've got a real antenna above ground, and you have a mirror image of that antenna below ground, and most of the time, for most configurations, those two antennas are 180 degrees out of phase with each other, because the signal that reflects off the ground, the horizontal portion of the signal, reverses 180 degrees in phase, approximately, when it reflects off the ground. So, if you study a antenna above ground, and you make believe it is two vertically stacked antennas in free space, and one fed out of phase with the other, and you study that antenna pattern, that's very close to what you get with the real antenna, one antenna above ground. You have to add a little correction factor, because the signal reflecting off the ground does experience a little bit of extra phase delay and a little bit of attenuation, but at least it gives you the trend. Ground isn't, the reflection off of Earth for HF antennas isn't too magic once you realize there's a mirror image below ground of whatever antenna you put above ground. And studied from that point of view, it gives you a pretty good prediction for the way it's really going to behave. It allows you to predict what the elevation angle of radiation is going to be. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
Thank you very much. Now you got me somewhere. I was kind of lost. Okay. You have a mirror image of an antenna in the ground. So imagine you have an antenna above the ground, and half of a dipole is active, when the other half of the dipole is counterpoise. At the next half of a cycle, you have a reverse story. So my understanding is that a similar pattern we can see in the ground. Now understand why Marconi was doing that. Why Marconi was putting a lot of copper beam in the ground. How would you picture the dipole with the active and counterpoise in within the ground? And to actually,
Dick, wouldn't that be NVIS antenna?
Now, Wes keeps saying that half the antenna is in the ground, and there's three different ways that could be interpreted. Is there a real dipole above ground, and you're talking about the mirror image below ground, or was some of the dipole, half of the dipole, stuck into the earth? That's not clear. Over to you, Wes.
Well, that's why we need to answer all of the possible scenarios, because if I knew the answer, I would be following Marconi, not saying he and asking. Let's say we have two arms of the antenna of the dipole above the ground, and how then the mirror copy of that antenna is behaving in the ground. You need to have active and counterpoise inside the ground, as we have above the ground. Then we go to another scenario.
Now, each time I'm asking these questions, I'm not asking what Marconi did. I'm asking how you're using your words and what you mean. You've got a real dipole above ground, two halves of a dipole above ground. I presume it's parallel to the ground, some distance above ground. Then you start talking about antennas below the ground. And it's not clear, are you talking about the mirror image of the first antenna that appears to be in the ground, or is there other antennas in the ground? I know you put some metal screening, 75 centimeters, I think you said, below the ground. And people do that in order to make the ground more conductive, to make the reflection off the ground more clearly defined. Ground is really a volumetric resistive material. When I say you get a reflection off the ground like a mirror, that's a simplification. What the Earth really does to a radio wave at HF frequencies is a bit more complicated. The top surface of the Earth has got a dielectric constant of something like 5 or 6, and depending on how much moisture is in the soil, it's got partial conductivity. Some other funny things happen, and you make a more controlled environment when you put down a whole lot of copper screening. In the case of a broadcast antenna, an AM broadcast antenna usually is electronically something close to a quarter wave vertical antenna. The other half of the dipole for that ground plane antenna really is the mirror image of the real radiator above ground versus the image of one below ground. Well, the image of one below ground experiences quite a bit of insertion loss of the ground. Therefore, you put down a whole lot of wire meshing. You'll put a whole lot of ground plane radials. You like to lay down a whole copper grid below the broadcast antenna, the quarter wave ground plane, in order to increase the overall efficiency. You want to stop the ground from being, you want to stop the earth from being a volumetric lossy material. You lay down enough copper, and now the antenna thinks it's operating above a complete sheet of copper. And it doesn't have to be a complete sheet of copper, because your wavelengths are so big that even if the spacing between the horizontal and vertical wires you've got in the ground, even if that spacing is 3 feet, 3 feet is such a small fraction of a wavelength compared to a 1,000-foot wavelength at 1 megacycle that it acts like a continuous sheet. You don't have to put down complete copper in between. It acts like the copper is already there. So for efficiency of transmit reasons, so as not to just heating up the worms around your antenna, they lay down a whole lot of rods, a whole lot of conducting rods, conducting wires in the ground around the broadcast antenna. I am guessing that maybe that's what Marconi was doing. I'm guessing that was part of his motivation. And 2XJM, K2LAW.
Okay, thank you very much. I encourage you, you have a link. If you need, I can resend the link. The link is also at Bernie's family for the Marconi video. It does show the schematics and the basics for the antenna, how the antenna was built. It's probably 1.5 hour long video made by Eric Dollard. I'm not trying to go to any conspiracy theory, but if there is something that somebody did, and let's say he was delusional, like I was delusional 2 years ago to some of gentlemen, or to one of gentlemen on the TechNet, okay, that's fine. I didn't spend $1 billion, he did. It must be something in it. Why the person does it. The history was, let me drop it. And this is not a conspiracy theory, it's a historical fact. At best that I was able to gather this information. In 1918, Marconi, based on Nikola Tesla project, built in California, both lines, something like that, a huge power station, and he had a 10 miles by 10 miles piece of land. About that time, with the help of government, RCA was created, and RCA, for some reason unknown to me, decided they want to build the building. Right in front of the Marconi building, on the land occupied by Marconi. So RCA, based on the information that I was able to get, was actually made to spy on Marconi and see what he is doing. Marconi planned to have three antennas. That's from Eric Dorot's video. One on Australia, one on Asia, and one on Europe. The energy is supposed to be sent through the Earth, so all of the ships, all of the continents would get the energy from Marconi. So before Marconi was to become a god, who then will be ruling everybody because of the energy, at approximately 1921, that's what the electoral says, United States government shut down the operation of Marconi with about $1 billion money spent on today's money, and it was not only his money but money of the investors as well. Question is, can you picture that kind of delusion? And to XGS.
I don't know this incident, so I can't address it, Wes. I'm a little worried about, is there an interpretation problem of what took place and how it's being described today? You're saying $1 billion in today's money. How many dollars was it then? And a problem I see with transmitting power through air. Tesla wanted to transmit power through air. If he succeeded, because of the way most methods of transmission transmit signal somewhat isotropically, send it in all directions at once, to focus the energy requires a lot of wavelengths of antenna to do that. I can focus my radio signal at 10 gigahertz into a pencil beam that is 3.5 degrees wide, but it takes a 2-foot diameter parabolic dish to do that. It's a little bit like a flashlight. It's like the parabolic lens on a flashlight. And the piece of waveguide is sort of like a dipole in front of it, illuminating the flashlight. So I can get a 3-degree beamwidth. But that antenna is 24 wavelengths in diameter. That's where the focusing is coming from. You have to make an investment in real estate. Well, the power that Marconi or Tesla wanted to transmit, let me drop, the power they wanted to transmit might have been at 60 cycles. 60 cycles is a huge wavelength. If he wants to aim that signal in some particular direction with a 3-degree beamwidth, it takes 24 wavelengths of antenna to do that. 24 wavelengths at 60 hertz is probably bigger than the Earth. So I'm slowly concluding he didn't have the ability to decide which direction the signal was going to be radiated. Therefore, he's radiating it in all directions at once. Therefore, if there's any simple method of picking up the signal, everybody can pick it up. And how does he charge the people? How does he know how much is being picked up by which person and how much to charge them? So transmitting power, 60-cycle power through the air, is very difficult to do. And if you succeed, your problem hasn't ended. You still have other problems. So it was a very difficult project as I see it. N2XJN, K2RIW.
The way that I understand what I've seen, and everybody can view that video and material, was not only by Eric Dollard, by Dr. Peter Liederman, and a few others. So we're not talking about a simple person from the screen who is just telling the stories. What he wanted to do is have ultimate power of control. If, let's say, Asia doesn't want to pay, he simply switched off all of the Asia. So he was rather trying to create the mutual responsibility for him to pay. Let me drop. Again, he wasn't using the air. He was using Earth. So he was using Earth as a medium. He was using the trying to implement the longitudinal wave that would the medium would be Earth, but he was using the methods of the electromagnetic excitation to that. I thought that you had a chance to look at least the schematics that he's showing. Being on that side and showing all of these antennas, reminding all of the structure, it was humongous. That would let us more understand what he was doing.
Question, Dick.
The Dollard email, tell me what date and time so I can go to that one. Go ahead, John.
A quick question off topic is, did you get the picture of the car I sent you?
Yeah, that red car on the car carrier. That's a beauty. Is that yours?
Oh, no, that's my neighbor. He's got 23, or maybe he's got 30 by now. But that's a 1913 Sterling, from what I understand. I have to check with him again. But that'll be 100 years old, that car. Isn't it amazing?
He is quite a collector. And if you're saying he's got 30 vehicles like that, does he have a warehouse big enough to house all of those?
Well, his house, the son, who is the collector, is about 3 blocks from me. He built a new house, 12-car garage in the basement. And they have other properties where they have big storage facilities. But nice cars, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, that is that looks like it's been restored. And is he the guy that did the restoration, or did he buy it in that form? In which case, guarantee that wasn't cheap.
No, all the restoration was done by him, and it's all restored with original parts. Just look at those brass lanterns and stuff. Big dollars.
Do you envy him, John? Do you wish you had things like that?
No. If I wanted an antique car, I could buy it. It's not that. I don't appreciate it. I like looking at it, but I wouldn't want to own one. Where do you go, and how do you leave it? Like, if you want to go into a store, you leave it outside. You know what it'll be like. Too much of a liability.
I found it.
Okay, what date and which time? And I'll go straight to that email.
June 19 of 2012. Hold on. What the email is named revision number one, part one, material for the TechNet, 6/24/2012, longitudinal wave, practical and theoretical. What else it says inside? Longitudinal wave history and practical devices presentation by Eric Dollar, ham radio operator. And a history of introduction of electromagnetic longitudinal waves, differentiation between various waves, its types and origin, mathematical properties of calculation, and descriptive properties. That's part one. Part two.
You got 4 minutes, Wes.
Yeah, no. Part two is basic differences between the transversal longitudinal waves whatsoever. You can skip most of it. I just would like you to see that original movie. Part three, continuation of scientific support data. Part four, controversy over the transformer. Part six. Okay, got it. Eric Dollard, 1988, Tesla Marconi Wireless System. That's point number seven. Point number seven from that email. And then you have a link, the last link, and that's the link for this particular video, I believe.
Okay, the second, there is paragraphs number one through seven numbered inside. Am I supposed to go to the click on thing at the bottom of number seven? Is that what I'm supposed to go to?
Okay, I just pressed the last link, which is number seven. Number seven, point number seven, the very bottom, Eric Dollard, 1988.
Yeah, when it comes up, it says Tesla Marconi Wireless System.
That's correct. Now, this is probably, there are two videos probably for it, but this is definitely the one that gives you schematics that he shows. It's not very good quality, but you would be able to understand and see all of the remindings, all of the wires, all of the copper that is coming, all of the concrete that is the structure that is remaining. Plenty of that was devastated, but you can see a lot.
Marconi's folly.
Yeah, that particular video is an hour and 39 minutes long.
That's correct. But when you go to that, you can skip. You see also plenty of things that are interesting. He has an old receiver that he connect to the fire hydrant, and he got extremely good reception. Actually, three of the gentlemen are the ham radio operators: Eric Dollar, Peter Liederman, and what was the third one? Forgot the name.
Was that the brother?
Yeah. So, the ham radio operators, two of them, they have PhDs, one of them is just an engineer. So, I spoke to one of the gentlemen, and he said, yes, longitudinal wave exists, works, I've seen it, we three work of them on that, and the person who knows the most about longitudinal wave is Eric Dollard. Unfortunately, Eric Dollard moved to desert. John, what desert was that?
Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona, right. One of the members of the organization donated to him a property in the desert, and that property was lost to government. We don't know why and how. It was confiscated from him. Also, he was utilizing number of the old unused posts with the wires from the old telephone network. and tried to investigate with that, and three of the gentlemen admit that intentionally does polls after they find out that he's dealing with it. These polls were cut out. Not only him, I'm just telling the testimony of the gentleman. So, you know, what's true, what is not true, it's not my business. And to exchange. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys being on the TechNet, and have a good night, Dick.
Good night, you all. That was TechNet number 1414 of the series.
Good night, Dick. Have a great week. KC2WGB.
at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Delta Officer Roo K60PZ Mobile Richmond Hill is listening. Anybody around? This is K60PZ Mobile.
Nobody's around, Hal. WA2NLL.
Thanks for coming back to me. I figured I wasn't getting out.
Oh, you get out. You get out pretty regularly. It's awful early in the morning to be out blunging, though.
Yeah, just to take care of a few things here. Not that great of a weekend, I'll tell you. Look at this weather.
Wonder why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather. Well, yesterday wasn't bad. It's supposed to rain, I think, later in the day and possibly tomorrow and Wednesday. But, you know, without the rain, we wouldn't have any grass. Now, do you have grass in Richmond Hill, or are you, like, in one of these grassless dwellings?
No, there's grass in Richmond Hill. I took most of my grass I let it go, and I just put in rocks, you know, to cover the area, because the grass is a real pain in the neck. It grows through it anyway.
Yeah, there is some weed block type stuff you can put out there, but you are correct. For the most part, grass will go where it wants. It's like water goes where it wants, grass goes where it wants, you know. You really can't stop Mother Nature.
You can't. Hold on, I'll be right back. Gotta grab a rag.
Hey, don't call the times a rag.
Okay, we got the rag. Yeah, it's a rag. It's the post.
Yeah, that is a rag, I tell you. So, has our friend moved to Florida yet? I haven't heard him on. Well, maybe I missed him, but I don't believe I've heard him on recently.
I don't think he moved. I think he's still around. I just don't know if he's allowed to get on the radio in the morning.
Okay, I tell you, when I hear these stories about the hurricanes and the windstorms down in Florida, there was a guy on HF yesterday. He was saying it was 87 and disgusting. So when I hear weather forecasts like that, you know, they can tell me all the wonderful things about how nice it is and how wonderful it is, but 87 and humid is not my cup of tea.
Yeah, well, down there it's from one air-conditioned thing into another air-conditioned thing into another air-conditioned thing. Plus, you're running the risk of some bad weather. I'm not too excited about Florida, to be honest with you. To me, that's the place you go to get stretched out.
Yeah, well, most of them, they come back here to get stretched out, so... I don't know. I'm just looking at discounted, speaking of Florida, discounted Disney tickets. I tell you, Disney gives you like bupkis off their tickets now. So, yeah, if you want someplace really nice to move, you should move to Arizona. One of those areas of Las Vegas. Houses are really cheap there, and it's dry, and you don't have all that humidity dripping off the windows of the stores. All you have is the heat, and it's a dry heat.
That's true. That's true. I'm very familiar with the West Coast and the weather. You know, further west, you get a lot of smog and stuff on the basin, you know, Los Angeles. But in Nevada, Arizona, it's not bad there. Again, wide open. The roads are just like they are in Florida. Very wide roads. Not like they have here in the East Coast.
Well, you know, the sad part is, though, no matter how wide they make the roads, it seems that they're never wide enough. We were down in Grapevine, Texas, and they were putting in God knows how many lanes, like 6 lanes in each direction and all this stuff. And they said, you know what, by the time we finish this project, which is going to take them like forever, it's still not going to be enough. Then they're going to have to start all over again. So it's not something that they can keep pace with. I mean, everybody needs a car. And you have houses where you have 3 people and 5 cars because they need the SUV and they need this and that and the other thing. It's just incredible. And to hear that somebody, I don't know what your politics are, but to hear that somebody's making fun of saving the planet and keeping the oceans from rising, especially when you had all that to do down in the Gulf Coast, I mean, it's just like ignorance, at least in my opinion.
I'm not going to go there this morning. Believe me, I'm not going to go there. But, no, you have a point. I'll tell you, you know, living out west and living here in the east, it's so much different. It's 180-degree contrast. Yeah. I'll tell you, one area is very nice. It's Palm Springs. That's a beautiful area that you have to live in. If you want to be a little bit east and not along really the coastline, and the weather is decent, the area is beautiful. The only thing is, the cost of the homes are phenomenal.
WA2NL, what do you think? You're going to get everything for nothing, you know? It's like when people say, oh, I bought this thing, it's $5,000, I really fooled the guy, I only spent $3 for it. You know, it's the old saying, you don't fool the man behind the counter.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true. I'm looking at this weather. It's not exciting me at all. I had a couple jobs I have to try and knock out this week. Came in, get caught up on stuff. I've been busy working with a dinosaur, and I forgot there are other animals out there.
As long as the dinosaur doesn't bite you. You know, you might want to, I don't know how many guys you have involved with your dinosaur project there, but you might want to see about getting some shirts made up, you know, with like some sort of logo. If any of you guys have some artistic talent, you get some nice shirts with a logo, you know, that say the Dinosaur Repeater, Richmond Hill, New York, or something like that. Nice to wear to ham fest, picnics, Dayton, etc.
You know, you make a good idea because of RAS, Jeff, his son-in-law is in the shirt business, and that's what he does. He made Jeff, a matter of fact, a shirt for Clegg. That was a very interesting shirt for Clegg Radios. I'll mention that to Jeff. It'd be a novel thing.
Richie K&B makes them up also. Not that this is a plug for him, but, you know, you get more than one price. But I'm just looking, Consumers Report just reviewed generators, and they actually like the Generac, which they say the power isn't clean. I don't know if it's radio-grade clean, but the thing is pretty cheap, and it actually got a pretty good review, so. Curious, just what I need. I could roll another generator into the garage here.
Well, any generator is going to be radio-clean. The reason being, a generator is going to generate sine waves. It's when you use an inverter off a battery that you run into problems. Because not all inverters are sine wave inverters. To be a sine wave inverter, it has to first start off with a 60 cycle oscillator and then amplify the oscillator. But most of the inverters are just the square wave choppers. So as far as generator goes, as long as you set the RPM right, you got 60 cycles and it's pure sine wave.
All right, well, I picked up the Honda last year for Irene, and have yet to use it. I think it's still sitting in the box, but that's not a problem. I don't think anything's going to happen to it because we forget. Did you test it? Yeah, okay. Here we are. It's a Generac GP5500, 5,500-watt generator. Free shipping, no tax. Straight to your door, $689. I wonder what liftgate service is. I think liftgate service is, to order liftgate, they cannot be shipped. Instead, they'll ship via trucks which are designed to unload at loading docks. If you have a loading dock or forklift, you don't need liftgate service. If you're a residential customer and don't order liftgate, you need at least 2 to 4 able-bodied people present to unload the generator. Well, the thing's about 200 pounds, so I guess either you find a friend with a forklift or you pay these guys the extra dough.
It's only about 200 to 400 pounds. That's not bad. My Johnson desks weigh 450 pounds. That's not very heavy at all when you really think about it for that type of power. And that's gasoline. What's the consumption of the gas? How many gallons does it burn an hour?
I think they said the thing will run 11 hours on a full tank, and I'm thinking a full tank looks about 3 gallons, although I don't know. I'm looking at the picture of the thing. It's kind of hot. So it might be 5 gallons. It'll run 11 hours, but, yeah, 200 pounds still is a lot of weight to get off the back of a truck. Like I say, you know, you start looking for neighbors. The guy shows up, and you're waiting for someone to help you take it off, and there ain't nobody there. You know, and you really don't want to run the risk of saying to the guy, you know what, here's another 25. Could you take it on, put on the tailgate and drop it? Because they may say, no, it's normally 50 to do that. Who knows? Right now, don't plan to buy one. Have nowhere to put it anyway. The Honda, even in the box, isn't all that big. And if I ever get the panel rewired here, go to 150 or 200 amp service, I might see about having to put in the transfer switch out there, too, so you could actually just pop the generator in to the outside, flip the switch, and you're good to go. And, of course, you know what will happen then? There'll be another, you won't see another hurricane for 50 years. WHYNOL.
WHYNOL, KCCC, you're right. Yeah, well, you could set that thing up where you don't even have to flip the switch. If your power gets interrupted for over a certain period of time, the thing will automatically go on. So that's no problem. 550 watts, the 5,000 watts. Oh, yeah, you can run a few things with that. That you can run a few things with. Very interesting. I wouldn't even have a place for one. I would do better just running battery-operated equipment instead of trying to run AC equipment. But then, if it's really a long time you have to be without power, you've got to make sure at least keep the refrigerator closed. Don't open it. I am pulling into my spot here to grab something. I don't know what I'm going to grab, but it should be interesting. And yeah, sure, I'll talk to Rick about the shirts, and I'll also talk to Jeff's son-in-law. You know, come up with an interesting type of design. And hopefully, you know, we're going to try and get incorporated IRLP on the dinosaur also. That's why I'm splitting with Sidey.
There you go. You could also get coffee mugs made up, hats. There's all sorts of stuff, you know. And if you go with the right supplier in terms of quantity, you may not have to make up 500 of them. You may be able to make up onesies and twosies because they have all these wonderful machines now that can do as-needed stuff. All right, Hal, you have a great day. Hopefully the rain won't mess up your parade there, and maybe we'll catch you later. 73WH1LL.
No sweat. WH1LL, K6DTZ, is going to be QRT.
WH1LL,
WH2ZX Mobile. Hello, Jerry.
Richie.
So what's the story, Jerry?
Believe it or not, I'm going into work.
I believe it, I believe it. Look, better you than me.
It was up Saturday and Sunday.
What can I tell you? Are you going September 29th, Charles Rowe in Malden, Massachusetts is having an open house.
September 29th, who's having an open house? Charles... Oh, I heard of Charles Rowe, I think. Is that what you said?
Charles Rowe Supply Company is a very, very big train... very, very big train dealer.
It's, I thought I said Charles Rowe, but Charles Rowe is basically, O and LGB and bigger, or bigger than O, so it won't affect me. No, I think I got a hemp fest somewhere in Jersey, a small hemp fest on the 29th.
Yeah, I was watching Quarters last night for a while. I thought I'd find a segment about you on there.
Well, I moved some doors over that was, you know, sitting behind my ham shack, and I put them on the side of the, you know, corridor, and I put boxes next to them to hold it up, and now I have to walk sideways into my den. I can't even walk. What's this guy? He goes around. He goes in the left. He gets into the left turn lane. You know, he just sort of makes like a 290-degree turns to get into the left turn lane where they have like the little stanchions. And then he decides after getting the left turn lane, he's going to go straight and then cuts the next set of the cars off to get two cars ahead, maybe.
Oh, well, why don't you get yourself a pod, you know, or maybe a container, like from a container ship type deal. Put the container in the backyard. You can put some more stuff back there.
Well, I could have bought my neighbor's house, but I don't think it's for sale anymore. I could have moved everything. You cut a hole in the wall and put everything across the thing. Now, I'm on Woodhaven. I'm actually in the house neighborhood now, passing. And there's always two of these police scooters just parked here. I think they're just, like, abandoned here because you never see anybody with them. And they just, you know, one's in the divider between, like, the express local lanes. And the other's parked on the curb, and they've been there for at least a week already.
What can I tell you? Jerry, what in the world do you need with all the stuff you have in the house? It sounds like you have stuff that you don't even know what you have anymore.
I tried to bring it to some flea markets to get rid of it. In fact, I was playing with some new computers I acquired the other day. And I tried to put a dual video board in. I don't think it was designed as a dual video board. I bought one yesterday for like $8. It had the DVI connector with the splitter that says VGA1, VGA2, but Windows 7 doesn't want to recognize the driver for it that I sort of installed, and it just basically says standard VGA driver, and then for the software that lets you split the monitors, says you don't have an ATI driver in it, so we're not going to work.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you didn't buy the stuff to begin with, you wouldn't have to worry about getting rid of it. I mean, you seem to be bringing more in than is going out.
Well, some of the computers go to LimeWalk. The other ones, you know, as I said, I need a, you know, for ham radio in LimeWalk, I got to run like 6 computers.
Yeah, but how many rooms?
unfinished basement, which is half the, you know, like maybe one-third of the basement, the other third is the garage. That doesn't make any sense. The other third is the garage. The garage, and then the boiler room on the side of the garage. So the den is in the back, and that's what's filled up with junk. And the air conditioning blew out in it the other day, so actually I turned the living room air conditioner on and then closed the doors, and it's sort of like the air soaked down the staircase, and it cooled the den off a little bit. Well, the weather got cool yesterday, one or the other.
Or both. What can I tell you? Better you than me. I'm trying to throw stuff out here, which is why I'm not buying too much these days. It's just, at one point, the UPS guy knew me as a regular.